You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, this is Bob. So a quick preface to this conversation with Shaquille Hashim of the Transformer newsletter. Shaquille and I taped this conversation right before the AI world got some big and kind of unsettling news, which is that Anthropic revealed that a not yet released model called Mythos had demonstrated the ability to find vulnerabilities in all kinds of software, including widely used software like Windows. And because this news broke right before we spoke, we don't address it in the conversation, but I wanted to note how many points of contact it has with the conversation we did have. So for starters, we agreed in the course of this conversation that AI very much needs to be governed at the international level. And this is certainly a good example of that, because if a bad actor in any country gets a hold of software with this power, the power that Mythos apparently has, that could be bad news for people in all kinds of countries. So it's not enough to govern these things at just the national level. We also agreed kind of later in the conversation that it probably, to get the world to focus on the need for international governance, you may have to have some kind of catastrophe, but we hoped that what you would have instead is just kind of a near miss, something that gets the world's attention to the potential for catastrophe. And I'm hoping that news like this could serve that purpose and could get people's attention. And I will say that in the Wednesday New York Times, okay, Shaquille and I taped this on Tuesday, that's when the news broke, Tom Friedman, very prominent columnist, wrote a column about this issue, about the Mythos issue, and said, this is the kind of thing we're going to need to collaborate with China on to address this kind of problem. So apparently this news is having some of the kind of effect I'd hope it would have. The last thing is just that the whole conversation Shaquille and I had is about the guys who are running these big AI companies, you know, Anthropic, OpenAI, Google, and, you know, whether we can trust them and whether it matters if we can trust them and the various reasons it may matter whether we can trust them. And I think this is a good example of that. It sounds like in this case, Anthropic did the right thing. They have not released this model broadly. What they are doing, they say, is they're sharing it with, you know, Microsoft, Google, and other players that can use it to patch the software holes before somebody exploits them. And that's good. But we'll have to keep an eye on them to make sure that, you know, they don't release this model sooner than might be optimal and with too few safeguards. Who knows? But in any event, I think it does matter who's running these three companies. That's largely what this conversation is about. So I hope you'll watch or listen to it and do so with this recent and really very important news in mind. Hi, Shaquille.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for showing up. Let me introduce us. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of the Non-Zero Newsletter. This is the Non-Zero Podcast. You are Shaquille Hashim, editor of Transformer, which can be found at transformernews.ai. It is Transformer, right? Not The Transformer. That's the official name of the publication.
Yes, just Transformer.
And, you know, it's interesting because it's a true kind of AI news site that is written by people who are quite conversant in AI, but I would say, you know, not written just for a technical audience. It's written, you know, for lay people who want to understand the stuff. And you're not the only one there. You've got a few people on staff. And so you really generate a fair amount of stuff. And
yeah,
so I've been looking forward to having you on.
We're up to four people now. Our primary audience is policymakers and people working in AI policy. The thesis of the publication and the reason I started it is because I very much had the feeling that society might be on the cusp of developing really transformative AI. Mm-hmm. And that as things currently stand, governments aren't adequately prepared for it. And so our aim is to help provide decision makers with reporting and analysis needed to hopefully help steer this very weird time we're in a good direction.
Yeah. And I assume Transformer is a pun for people who aren't conversant in the recent history of AI. There was a big development that greatly facilitated the evolution of a large language model called a Transformer. I wanted to talk about Sam Altman. There's been a big New Yorker piece on him that I guess he's not entirely happy about. But also Dario Amodei, head of Anthropic, Dimas Hassabis, head of Google's DeepMind, and of course, Elon Musk, head of X. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg has yet given us reason to discuss him. Maybe his big superintelligence bid will pay off, but it hasn't yet. Right now, it seems like there's kind of three, maybe four big, you know, U.S. players, certainly, and they're a little ahead of the biggest Chinese players, I'd say. So, and you know, the question arises kind of, can we trust these guys? Now, there's also the question of, in a way, do we need to? In other words, what exactly will their role be in shaping AI as opposed to inexorable forces of the market and, of course, regulation, which there hasn't been much of. You know, I think the things they're doing matter. And a couple of them, certainly Sam and Dario, got into the business purporting to be driven mainly by, I think, concerns about how powerful this is going to be and the importance of guiding it conscientiously and so on. It's worth giving them a checkup and seeing if we, I think, have reason to believe that that's that they've stayed true to these concerns. Now, you've read, I have not read the New Yorker pieces by Ronan Farrow on Sam Altman. I read Farrow's Twitter thread, and I didn't see a lot that was breathtakingly new. I've read the book, Karen Howe's book. Is it called Empire of AI? And that was a very well-reported book about, I mean, there have been controversy over her treatment of the water issue, but it's mainly about OpenAI, and I thought it was a very well-reported and very good book. And, you know, Sam Altman doesn't come out looking too great there. And some of the things I saw in the Twitter thread sounded like echoes of that. But what's your take? You've read the piece. What's your take on that?
Yeah, so I think you're broadly right. There is nothing absolutely revelatory in this new piece from Ronan Farrow and Andrew Marantz, I think his name. But I think it's a very good piece for a couple of reasons. One is it does have a bunch of smaller details, none of which are quite groundbreaking enough to, you know, be front page news by themselves, but I think collectively add up to deepening the picture that Karen Howe and others have shown us. So one example is it's got quite detailed discussions or detailed reporting on discussions OpenAI apparently had about auctioning off its technology to different countries, including Russia and China, in an effort to kind of create a prisoner's dilemma, I think someone calls that, where every country feels like they have to give OpenAI money, otherwise they're going to be in a weaker position. That's one thing that was somewhat new to me. It had been reported on previously, but not really in as much detail. We also learned that Ilya Sutskever had, I think it's 200 pages of notes about Sam Altman that he'd been compiling over the years that collectively add up to this idea that he is not an honest person. I can't remember if it's him or other people in the article, but a recurring impression in the article is people calling Sam Altman a sociopathic.
That seems pretty strong.
It is very strong. But I mean, and this is the other thing that I think the piece does a really good job of, job of is they interviewed, I think, over 100 people. And the reporters say that they did this with the intention of trying to figure out what Sam Altman's character is like. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they explicitly say this in the piece, but you're very much left with the impression that the overriding sense they got of Sam Altman's character from talking to him and from talking to lots of people around him is that he is dishonest, manipulative, and doesn't really seem to care a lot of the time about the consequences of his actions. And like you said, that's not breaking news. The board drama a couple of years ago now was predicated on the idea that Sam Altman wasn't consistently candid to the board. Dario Amodei left OpenAI because he didn't trust Sam Altman. So did Mira Murati, reportedly, and Ilya Sutskever. So none of this is that new, but I think it kind of confirms the impression lots of us have had. And, you know, it makes it a bit more concrete just with the sheer volume of reporting. They've been working on this piece for a year and a half, I think. And that research really shows in it.
Yeah, I do want to get to the other players eventually, like Dario, but Sam is such a fascinating case. I mean, it's funny how we come to refer to them as their first names. I don't know about you, by their first names. I don't know about you. I don't know them personally, but
me neither.
I mean, first of all, they tend to have very distinctive names. Demis, Dario, that, you know, that pretty much distinguishes them from every other person we know, right? Their first names alone. Sam doesn't, but anyway, let's call him Sam. Yeah, you know, Karen Howe in her book is maybe conveys somewhat the same idea, but in more charitable language, it sounds like. I mean, look, I've heard from a lot of people, he's duplicitous, you can't trust him, or you can't trust what he says. But the way she puts it is it's almost like he's such a people pleaser. He'll say to one person, yeah, okay, you can run this project. And the other the other person will say, hey, can I run this project? And he'll go, oh, yeah, you can run the project. And it's like, well, they can't both be true. And that's kind of the way it comes up. Now, there are consequential deceptions that she mentions in the book, and some of them I know are repeated in the New Yorker piece. But I think there's no doubt he's as a practical matter, kind of a shady character that you have to keep an eye on. Look, honestly, I don't know how many people in the corporate world that distinguishes him from. And I mean that literally. I don't know. I haven't spent much time there. I've seen a lot of people I wouldn't want to, put in charge of my child or my pet for a day. There is that. On the what does seem new in the piece is the thing you alluded to, where they are supposedly, this was Greg Brockman, right? Fascinating character in his own right, because he has kind of almost spearheaded the attempt to influence policy with money. I don't want to put it too crudely, right? But why don't you give me the details before we get back into that issue of them trying to put the nations of the world in a prisoner's dilemma situation and get money from all the big countries or whatever it was. Because it was Brockman who was quoted, I think, most directly proposing that in the kind of paragraph of the New Yorker piece I read. Why don't you talk a little about Greg Brockman and what you know about him and his role in influencing policy and so on?
Yeah, so he is, like you say, a really fascinating character. He has been interested in, I think he actually got into AI through an interest in AI safety. So when he was working at Stripe, I think he used to spend quite a lot of time reading Lesserong, which is a well-known rationalist forum with lots of AI safety discussion.
Founded by Eliezer Yudkowsky, I think, originally.
Indeed, yes. Mm-hmm. Brockman got in that way, is my understanding. And I think he used to hang out with Dario. There was a report in the Wall Street Journal last week that Dario, Daniela, who's Dario's sister and also president of Anthropic, Holden Karnofsky, who was the founder of Open Philanthropy, a big effective altruism donor, and also now works at Anthropic. He's married to Daniela, as it happens. They all used to hang out together back in the day. I think back in like 2016, 2017, maybe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, now Brockman has become OpenAI's like political man almost. He was the biggest donor to President Trump's super PAC last year, or in the second half of last year. And he has been donating to the Leading the Future network of PACs, which is kind of a pro-innovation PAC network that to date has mostly pushed against AI regulation and mm-hmm. kind of pushed against candidates like Alex Borres in New York who've been pushing for harder AI regulation. Yeah, it's interesting and it's very hard to say how much is this Brockman doing it of his own accord versus mm-hmm. Brockman being the guy at the company who takes a fall for all this stuff in a way. Mm-hmm. Because companies aren't allowed to donate directly to candidates. It's very common for the money to go through an executive instead. And so it's hard to know to what extent Greg made the decision of his own accord versus is doing it because it ties into OpenAI's broader political strategy.
Yeah. And he's a technical guy of, I guess, some significant yes. accomplishment, right? I mean, more than Sam, actually. And this is the difference between, say, a Sam and a Dario, right? Sam, I mean, he's a lot more technical than me, knows how to code, but he's not an AI researcher guy the way Dario is, the way Demis is. Especially not the way Demis is, who's been at it a long time, I guess. So, yeah, why don't we, before we get further into, say, the New Yorker piece, Sam's character, and I definitely want to talk about Dario. I wrote a piece for Non-Zero not long ago. What was it titled? Dario Amade Isn't the Hero We Need. I have doubts about him. I have doubts about both of them. But why don't we talk about the premise that this really, really matters? Which I think ostensibly, at least, all of these guys kind of share. In other words, the idea is, and I think this goes back to early Less Wrong days when, that's Eliezer's blog, and Eliezer's history is that he starts out enthusiastic about AI, singularity, everything, and slowly becomes more of a doomer. In fact, I had him, I had him on a podcast about 15 years ago when he was in transition, and that was an interesting conversation. And but the premise has kind of been there's going to ultimately be this one super intelligence. I mean, you tell me, I may have this a little wrong, and maybe it hasn't been that explicit, but it seems like the idea has been there's going to be this one super intelligence. And if we shape it wisely, if we get it aligned, things can be okay. But if we don't, it might, take over and crush us and kill us. And so it very much matters who is in charge of building this super intelligence thing, right? So the idea is kind of ultimately, one God rules them all and you want it to be a good God. And so it matters who shapes the God. Maybe that's a caricature of it, but you tell me how much you would change about what I've said.
No, I think that's broadly right. I mean, there are different views among different people here. Some people are big believers in the singleton hypothesis, which is more or less mm-hmm. the one you just laid out. I think others think that there probably will end up being multiple superintelligences. But even those people, I think, still believe that a huge amount of power is conferred on whoever gets there first. Because that first person could feasibly have kind of a decisive strategic advantage, is what it's sometimes called, over everyone else. Because mm-hmm. if you're the first to build the superintelligence, maybe you can just shut down everyone else's project, or maybe you can outcompete them because suddenly you've got this infinite money-making machine And how can anyone else ever catch up to you once you get to that point? And so I think that idea of being first is really important in understanding how these people are thinking about it. There's also the question of whoever is first or whoever is at the frontier generally gets to kind of lay down the rules of the road, in that you're invited to meetings with the president about what to do about mm-hmm. this. You're mm-hmm. the one everyone's asking, so what should the laws be? You're the one the government is contracting with to use your very powerful AI system. So I think that's in there too, of this idea that whoever is first has significantly more power than the people in second and third place. And like you say, this is the motivating story for the foundation of almost all the major AI labs. So DeepMind was started for different reasons. DeepMind was started mostly because Demis Hassabis is very, very interested in solving like the secrets of the universe, as he calls them. But then OpenAI is founded because Elon Musk didn't trust Demis and didn't trust Google's founders, Sergey Brin and Larry Page, to shepherd this technology. There's this story where Elon was having a conversation with Larry Page, I think, and Larry expressed an idea that it didn't matter if humans remained around as long as there were sentient creatures. Those could be machines and Larry Page would be fine with that. So the story goes. And apparently that really freaked Elon out. And then Elon said, okay, I need to start my own AI company. He drafts in Sam Altman to work with him on it. They start OpenAI. They then have a falling out with Elon then ditching OpenAI and saying, I need to start my own company because Sam can't be trusted because I don't like Sam. And then Dario, who used to work at OpenAI, and a lot of the other Anthropic co-founders who all worked at OpenAI, experienced working with Sam and said, we can't trust Sam. We need to be the ones to do it. So then they leave and they start their own company. And so, yeah, this idea of only we can be the ones to do this responsibly is kind of the driving force behind kind of the whole AI industry.
Yeah. The according to that story about the Elon-Larry blow-up, at some point, Larry Page said, you're a speciesist. Because mm-hmm. To Elon, because he favored humans over sentient silicon-based life. Now, you mentioned the word singularity. That's a great self-promotional opportunity for me, because I have a book coming out in 2 months called The God Test about AI. And there's a title called, there's a chapter called The Singleton and the Singularity. And the singleton, of course, is this idea that, you know, technological progress gets faster, 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 faster. Suddenly, you're just in a whole new world eventually, and I want to talk about whether actually we're entering kind of the singleton. It's suddenly kind of a not crazy thing to say, but the singularity, that's an idea that was introduced by Nick Bostrom. He had a chapter about it, I think, in his book, Superintelligence, which came out, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago, maybe more. Very influential book, and the singularity is anything that kind of governs the planet or coordinates, the policies to the extent that they need to be coordinated. It's a coordinating mechanism. As Bostrom says, it could be a flat-out world government run by a dictator. It could be a democracy of nations. It could be run by AI. There could be no humans left. It could be run by humans. In theory, a singleton is a very kind of big, you know, large concept that encompasses a lot. And, I think there's a lot of people, at least including me, and I think I've seen a little of this emphasis in your periodical Transformer. Do they still use the word periodical? Maybe that doesn't make so much sense. Yeah. You've paid attention to issues of international governance. I know when you looked at the recent Bernie Sanders initiative, you noted that it doesn't really talk about the need for some kind of international treaty or anything. Now, all of these guys have paid lip service to that. Like, with a, I think even Elon, but certainly I know for a fact that Dario, Demis, and Sam have talked about that in the abstract. I'm not sure how much concrete encouragement they've given to it. In fact, if anything, some of them, I would say especially Dario in a way, but Sam, you know, when you start talking about regulating them at the national level, they say, well, no, we can't do that because we're in this headlong race with China. They tend not to say, well, you can't do that because it's first of all, it's not enough, right? There are a lot of policies when it comes to AI. It's one of these issues where certain kinds of issues, if you're going to address them, they're going to have to pretty much be addressed at the international level. It's kind of like, you know, biological weapons. If a pandemic starts anywhere, you're in deep trouble. So you can't just regulate bio labs in your nation and feel secure. AI has a lot of those properties. And that's one reason, you know, Bostrom, I think, you know, kind of talked about the idea that a singleton one way or another is probably in our future, unless we're going to wind up in a very chaotic and unfortunate situation. But the issue, you know, to get back to the singularity, the issue of acceleration, I think in a way, one of the strongest critiques of these guys is they have all talked as if we need to proceed very deliberately, cautiously, and, you know, make sure we've got this stuff right. But once market dynamics take over, they all surrender to them. And look, let's face it, what CEO wouldn't, maybe, you know, if you're going to be a CEO and you find yourself in a race, and it's true that it's not trivially easy to regulate. I mean, it's true that as of now, we have no way of slowing down Chinese companies, for example, as of now. I don't think it's a policy impossibility, but it is true. And so before we get back to kind of the character of these guys, do you agree that that's kind of a big issue here, is that in the end, like, as of now, they're basically all going full speed ahead, and they have all suggested things in the past that would indicate that that's not a responsible thing to do. Is that a fair?
Yeah, I absolutely think it's a fair characterization. And I think I've written pieces criticizing Anthropic about this in particular, because Anthropic, you know, has much more of a focus and its messaging and marketing on we're the responsible company, we're the safety focused company. Mm-hmm. Dario in general is more vocal about existential risks than the other CEOs. But even they, I mean, the policies they're advocating for are very light touch. To date, it's just really been transparency mechanisms, which are great, but are not really adequate for the scale of the problem, like you say. And just a couple of months ago, they removed one of their premises from their responsible scaling policy, where previously it said that they wouldn't keep building a model if it didn't, you know, satisfy various safety thresholds and safety criteria. They've removed that now. They've said that even if they can't guarantee that the model is safe, they're going to keep building. And they attribute this to the competitive dynamics that exist. There's a quote from Jack Clark, who used to be policy head at Anthropic. He's now in a new role there. But there's a quote from him in the New Yorker article kind of blaming capitalism for this, and saying like market dynamics force you and force companies, including Anthropic, to cut corners, to accelerate even when it is not the best thing for the world. I'm torn between being sympathetic to that view that realistically, yeah, if Anthropic slow down or stop, OpenAI isn't going to and DeepMind isn't going to, and so what does that actually get you? But at the same time, I do wish that people wouldn't just, you know, throw up their hands and say, oh, capitalism, kind of like throwing away their agency almost. Whereas I think it would be possible for, if everyone agrees we're in a very bad position, it should be possible for us to come to some sort of agreement that we should stop or slow down. In the absence of that, I think is where you need governments to step in, both the US government and, as you say, international cooperation, international treaties.
Yeah, there was a moment at Davos when Demis and Dario were in conversation. And Dario was doing this kind of, hey, you know, China, given China, we just can't really slow down. And he said, hey, look, if it was just Demis and me, we could work this out and kind of slow things down. Well, A, I'm not sure about that. But B, in any event, Dario, next logical step is, well, maybe we can work things out with China, start talking to them about this. But Dario seems more than any of them to have just this ideological aversion almost to working things out with China. I mean, you know, there's this insufficiently discussed, I believe, part of his Machines of Loving Grace essay, where he talks about the need to, you know, use export controls to maintain hegemony over China, that, you know, this League of Democracies needs to have, I think he used the phrase military dominance over China, and, you know, kind of bring them to their knees. It's a little vague what he wants in the end, but let's just say he's a real, real China hawk in a way that I don't think Sam and Demis or Elon are. And this is one thing that bothers me about him. I guess, you know, in a way you have to take your hat off. I do think it's ideological as opposed to a strictly cynical invocation of China to avoid regulation. But in any event, Anthropic has been, they've done, when you think about it, some pretty, they've added some real accelerants to the thing. I mean, you mentioned the safety level thing. You're right, on bioweapons in particular, the use of AI to make bioweapons, it seems like they've kind of surrendered. I mean, they moved it up to safety level 3, I don't know, like a year ago. They said, okay, now our A models are at this level of concern and regarding bioweapons. And then, and since then, with the new models, they said, well, yeah, we may be at 4 now. We don't know. It's just getting hard to say. But in any event, as you said, they've changed the safety, the guidance, so that they are not compelled, even by their own lights, to kind of worry about this, so to speak. Claude Code was itself, in a way, a big accelerant, right? I mean, why don't you give me your take on kind of where we are in that regard? As I said, you're hearing more and more serious discussion within AI, like, we are feeling the singularity approaching here, because the technology, especially in the Claude Code, you know, powerfully agentic era, we are seeing progress in AI accelerate the development of AI, right? What is your sense of how real this is and how worrisome it may or may not be?
Yeah. So I think it's important to, you know, distinguish between some of the hype and the reality. On the hype side, I mean, you've got Marc Andreessen said this week that AGI is here. I think that's nonsense. I don't think the models we have are AGI by any, you know, standard definition of the term.
I recommend discounting anything Marc Andreessen says by about 70%. But go ahead.
Yeah, seems like. But in terms of the point about like the approaching singularity, I definitely think there's something there. I'm hesitant to say that we're in the singularity already, but what we definitely are in is the beginnings of what used to be called recursive self-improvement. So this idea that the AI models are improving themselves, that's overstating it. It's not quite what's happening right now. But what is happening is AI models are significantly advancing the abilities of humans to improve the AI models. It's speeding this up. And you're seeing this just in like the pace of features being released in Claude Code, or codecs. You're seeing it in the pace of new model releases. Those are coming thicker and faster than they ever have been. OpenAI is expected to release a new model this week. And you're seeing it in terms of the capabilities of these models is just kind of continuing to grow at an exponential rate, especially if you look at the famous meter time horizon graph of how long these models can, what length of task these models can do. And this is all being driven by AI tools helping the AI engineers build these models faster and better. And when you talk to people at the labs, they all think we're really, really close to fully automating this process. So I've heard some estimates of we will have automated AI research and development engineers by the end of this year. My instinct is that is faster than is actually going to happen, because I think there are parts of those jobs that are actually very hard to automate. Maybe some of the more like taste-based aspects. Also, you've kind of just got the traditional human problems that you always run into of, even if you've got unlimited resources and unlimited like intellectual horsepower, you have to coordinate people and you have to, you know, navigate the troubles of actually running an organization. But even if it's not the end of this year, the end of next year or the end of the year after that seems very plausible. And none of that is that far away. And once you hit that point of a fully automated AI R&D researcher, I think things start getting very crazy very quickly.
Yeah, I think they're going to start getting a little crazy even before that. When you look at how broadly this can AI can kind of affect life, you know, ranging from employment issues to safety issues to child rearing issues and on and on. But this idea of more and, you know, more and more rapid progress, maybe towards something you could call a singularity, is very much related to the contention that it does matter. You know, this idea that there will be this kind of one dominant superintelligence, because the idea is that once things are moving really fast, being just like 6 weeks ahead of another lab is everything. Because the faster things move, you know, the shorter a time span it takes to move beyond a true threshold. And like just suddenly, and this also matters in geopolitics, right? The idea is that if the U.S. Is ahead of China by only a few months, still, if you reach this threshold where whichever country has the best AI, you know, the best AI is so much better than the AI of 3 months ago that you can just say to the AI, hey, go into China's or go into America's social media system and like generate, you know, support for a coup and plan the coup and do the coup. Like there are people who think you'll get to that point. And if not, that at least you'll get to the point where in sheer physical weaponry, you suddenly have, you know, an order of magnitude advantage. So with both competition among labs and competition among countries, there is this idea that a small lead can suddenly give you total dominance, right? Does that make sense to you?
I mean, it's definitely plausible to me. I think my instinct is that the idea of like a truly decisive strategic advantage, I didn't quite buy it. Mostly, not for any particular like specific reason, but more from a general prior that the world is really, really complicated, and even a superintelligence will run into bottlenecks and problems. That I don't know. I can't foresee what they are, but sometimes you get people talking about superintelligence will eliminate the nuclear deterrent because it will invent some clever technology that lets you spot the nuclear submarines through the oceans using satellite imagery, and then America will know where all of China's nuclear submarines are, and then you can eliminate them, and then the idea of nuclear deterrence is over. Stories like that just always sound a little bit too neat to me. And just in the real world, things are complicated, things take time. I don't know if like I'd want to, you know, bet on that as our plan for safety of it's all going to be fine because something will happen and it'll be okay. But it does make me like a little bit skeptical of some of those ideas that you get this decisive advantage that no one else can then catch up to.
So maybe I should let you give us your kind of thumbnail take on some of the other players. We've talked a little about Sam, and is there one that you would most trust? If you imagine that, yeah, it's really going to matter at some point that one of them be a person of character and virtue and really have the planet's interests at heart, like, who would you most trust? I want to quickly do a tangent about Brockman, because I realized we never got back to the Greg Brockman thing. So this idea that you get the nations to say, hey, if you don't invest in OpenAI, all, you know, these other nations are, and then you're not going to have the best technology. Not a crazy business model, actually. But, and I think they would say, just in fairness, and I think Brockman is quoted as saying this, or somebody is, hey, we were just batting around ideas, and it's hard to tell from the reporting. You know, I've been in journalism enough to know that one should be a little skeptical about recreations of scenes and context and so on. But the other thing is, they might say, well, this is a way to get the nations coordinated, right? Give them a common stake. Honestly, I think it's kind of worth thinking about, given the challenges of a treaty. It's like, well, could you just make them all stakeholders in the same dominant company? Anyway, I want to put that aside for now and ask you, you know, to size up. You must have views of these people by now, kind of relative to one another, like what you like about them, what you don't. What would you say?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky in that, you know, so much of what we know is just, I mean, hearsay, for lack of a better word. I mean, good, deep reporting, but often you're only getting one side of the story. I think my impression of Sam Altman does generally match up with the one portrayed in that New Yorker article and books like Karen Howe's book. I think I probably agree with what you were saying earlier of, it's not necessarily that he's maliciously intentioned in all of these cases. It might just be this people-pleasing element of him wanting to keep everyone happy and so never say the thing that is going to upset people because he doesn't like confrontation. He's admitted to that himself before. It totally could be that. I don't think that necessarily makes it fine in that, you know, the end result is still the same. Dario is an interesting one where I think he is kind of wrestling with the contradictions more than the others. In that, I do think he is deeply worried about the risks of AI, but again, like the others, he's kind of convinced himself that he needs to be in the race and that he can do better where the others have failed. And I think maybe that's true, but it also does signal some level of arrogance, is maybe not quite the right word, but some kind of like self-confidence that worries me a little bit. And then in terms of the practical side, like Anthropic has not lobbied for policy or regulation as much as I think it should be, given its views. And so that does then raise some questions about like how sincere are they about the things they're saying. Demis is the one I find the most interesting. So I've been reading Sebastian Mallaby's new biography of him. I haven't finished it yet. But from what I have read so far, it's a really good book. Demis, much more than the others, is a capital S scientist, I think. He really seems motivated by this desire to understand the secrets of the universe, to like answer the big questions in physics that we've never answered, of, you know, why does time work the way time does? Where does gravity come from? Like all these giant kind of cosmic existential questions. And he says in the book multiple times that it's almost religious for him, and that he says that there are lots of things in the world that we don't understand. Said maybe you could call that God whatever. And what I want to do with my company is try and understand God, is try and understand what all these secrets are. And I think that's very interesting in that, A, it suggests to me that, I think I believe this, that he isn't motivated by power in quite the same way that the others are. He's much more motivated by curiosity in the scientific process. Mm-hmm. And on the face of it, that should be comforting. Like, you know, we're generally taught to think that scientists are like nice, good people. But the recurring impression I had while reading it was kind of comparing him to Oppenheimer or some of the other nuclear physicists back in the 40s and 50s. Who were, I mean, there's a Jurassic Park quote, like, so preoccupied with whether they could, they didn't think about whether they should. And I find that worrying in its own way, of how far are you willing to go to learn the secrets of the universe? Are you willing to jeopardize everyone's lives and completely upturn society just so you can find out, like, the truth? That worries me. And then, I mean, Elon is Elon. What more is there to say about him?
Actually, there is more, and I'd like to say it. But first, or provoke you into saying it. But first, I should say that the structure of this podcast is that we talk for a long time for the general public, and then we go into what we call overtime. That's available to paid subscribers of the Non-Zero newsletter. You can follow the link in the show notes and become one of those. Or you can go to nonzero.org and just look for this post and sign up there. And, of course, after that, you can just have your podcast feed set so that you always get the full conversation. Before we go into overtime, I want to, again, recommend that people check out Transformer. It's at transformernews.ai. Are there any other places you would direct them? I mean, I'm sure Transformer has like a Twitter feed and presumably various other feeds, and you do. What are some places you'd direct people if they want to find out more?
Yeah, so your best bet is subscribing to the newsletter. It's completely free and publicly available. So you can subscribe to us on Substack. You can follow us at Read Transformer on Twitter, Transformer News on LinkedIn, and then I'm very active on Twitter at Shaquille Hashim. And you can also follow all of our other reporters too.
Okay. All right. So yeah, let's, I do want to talk about Elon, and always an entertaining pastime, and talk more about all of them. You know, you've said some things that remind me of some things about Sam and Demis, and we'll do that at overtime. Thanks, everyone who's followed us this far. Hope you'll follow us into overtime.